Hi, this is Case Cornelis Morsink, and I'm from Kings Mill Cider in Stirling, Ontario. And we're located probably 30 kilometers north of Belleville, Ontario, and Trenton, Ontario. So you can kind of figure it out. So we're about 20 minutes off the 401. And we have a tasting room, so you're welcome to come anytime. We're open on Saturdays and Sundays, 11 to 6. And I run Kings Mill Cider with my wife, Margaret Van Halleford, who's sitting beside me, who doesn't want to talk. So, and now you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 148. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are on the northern shore of Lake Ontario in the town of Stirling. That is Stirling spelled with an I. Speaking to the makers at Kings Mill Cider. There'll be more on that in just a moment. But in the meanwhile, I'm going to catch you up on what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks out and about in Ciderville. If you are new to this podcast, well, welcome to Ciderville. And if you're a regular listener, you know that the last two Cider Chat podcasts were episodes that I call Cider Chat Live, where I am recording almost close to real time and then uploading it to you because I've been traveling. I've been overseas. And the first week, I was there for 2 weeks. And the first week I landed in Amsterdam, and that episode focused on touring about in the Netherlands because the Netherlands does have it going on with cider. You could land at Schiphol and go to a cider store right in Amsterdam and grab a bottle and go to the Vondelpark, which is kind of their version of a Central Park, and start drinking cider and enjoying the scene. We're going to be seeing more and more of that in the Netherlands. Some big news on that. The last day that I was in the Netherlands, I was on the border of Belgium at a restaurant and speaking to the manager there. And he told me that next, I think it's 2019, in Rotterdam, there's going to be a congress. That's a term that's used in Europe quite a bit. The comparable term would be a conference, but they call it a congress. A congress on food and gastronomic delights. And there are two main topics that are going to be spoken about at that conference. The first one's going to be on Jenever, which is only made in the Netherlands. And some people think that that is gin, but it's not really. It's really a Dutch drink that I think has been kind of tweaked out into more gin product, and it's only made in the Netherlands. So they're going to be talking about that. That's a big thing coming up. They're going to be trying to really push that traditional Dutch drink. And guess what the second topic is? Go ahead, guess. I give you like a New York second to guess, and you know it. It's going to be cider. That just like flips me out because it was only a short time ago. I would say it's in the past 4 years, 4 years ago, that I set up a cider meetup in Amsterdam with importers and some makers at a little sidebar that I knew who was willing to like give me the space to do really what was the first cider meetup for the Dutch. And now, just in a short window of time, they're going to be highlighting cider. And what we can expect to see in the coming year is more availability of cider because there's a lot of makers getting on it. And there's some are importing juice from the UK. I mean, that happens, right? It's happening in the US all over the map for sure. But they're also planting apples, and do not underestimate what these folks could do. I mean, shoot, you know, the Dutch have the Delft Project, which is where they basically tamed the ocean. That's right. They were even like consultants to Louisiana after the Hurricane Katrina, because they have this system where they're able to open up these gates and bring in fresh ocean water to clear out this huge area that is renowned for oysters and then close it off again. And of course, that's not good enough. They also make power doing that. So keep your eye on the Netherlands. I'm really excited for all the makers there, and certainly for us cider fans. That is cool. So that happened like my first week, and I was working in my other world of psychiatric care, and had this kind of heavy scene where I got to see my dear friend and one of my main instructors of my curriculum there. Last year, 2 weeks after I left, he was struck. He and his six-year-old son, were struck by a drunk driver. And everyone thought they were going to lose him. Yepa is his name. And miraculously, let me put it this way. This guy is a miracle man. I got to see him, and he was standing up and talking and communicating. He does have some traumatic brain injury, but wow, just the power of pure strength for living. So that was pretty emotional, because I was able to bring Yepa into that setting that he hadn't been in for over a year at the work site, and able to facilitate that. And talk about heavy. It was heavy, 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 heavy. I did a lot of bike riding to work that through. So that happened for the first week. And of course, I had a lot of cider on my side, and I was able to drink some local products. I have a little posting up on Instagram of a nice cider. You could check that out. One of the folks of that cidery actually is a patron of Cider Chat, and the cidery is called Iglestad. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but I'm going to put a link in the show notes. I was hoping to meet with them, but it didn't work out, but I know I will, because Netherlands has it going on, and at some point in the future, I will be leading a cider tour there, without a doubt, and it's going to be crazy, crazy fun. So stay tuned for that. Let me just take a pause here, and then I'm going to tell you what I just came home from the week after I was in the Netherlands. From the Netherlands, as many of you know, I was then going to be heading to France for the first Totally Cider Tour International. And just one word I could say about it is success. It was successful in every way and exceeded my expectations of what that trip could be. I told you a little bit about the Netherlands, where it was a little bit heavy. In France, it was heavy too. And those of you following along on social media, we were able to partake on a major moment, I think, for Cider Worldwide, when we were able to do a tribute to Jérôme Dupont with his father, Étienne Dupont, at the Domaine Dupont in Pays d'Auge. Wow. Heavy, heavy duty. And part of the beauty of this podcast for me is just connecting with people, like the folks who came along on the tour. They're already connected. They already knew like so much about me, and had a sense who I was. So when we all met up, it just went to figure that we all would get along, and we did. It was outstanding. We're just starting to drink cider from the morning to the evening. No one got wasted, and we were drinking a lot of cider. It was just really well paced. The food was unbelievable. My goodness, I'm just still full from all the food. Absolutely gourmet delight. Gave us a whole range of like a Norman buffet to a Michelin star experience. Our last cider dinner was with Eric Bordelais. That's after hanging out in the morning with Philip, the Perry farmer, walking out in his orchard. Everyone just adored the group, all the makers that I had been cultivating relationships with just flew out their doors to meet everybody on the bus. They were pumped. The people that I was traveling were pumped. It was just a love fest in cider. Again, beyond my wildest expectations. We were able to partake in the tribute, a toast that I asked everyone like yourself to join in on September 25th. To Jérôme Dupont. We pulled into the Domaine on the afternoon of the 25th, and it was kind of like a movie scene, because if you're not aware of that Domaine, you enter it on this long driveway, and at the end is this mansion, and there's like pillars. And as the bus pulled up at one end, we looked out the distance and we could see Jerome's father, Etienne, standing there. And, you know, obviously Jerome DuPont died at the age of 48, a really big loss to the family and to the world of cider because he was so innovative, really changing some of the path of Norman ciders. And to be able to meet with his father and some of the workers there and let them know that we're holding them in their thoughts, it was just, it was amazing. And he gave the family rate to everybody getting cider. That was insane. The family rate meaning like a deal. Gave me a bottle of 45-year-old Calvados from Domaine DuPont. And we took that bottle because the next day, I think it was Wednesday evening, after hanging out with the Agathe Letier and having a Norman buffet with her, we went to Mont Saint Michel, which we were able to approach at low tide and able to see that UNESCO heritage, World Heritage site, and made our way. We're all kind of like went our way into the Mont Saint Michel and then met up at a high point and did a toast again to cider, to love, to Jerome, to all the things that we care about in Ciderville. I could still taste that Calvados. Walked in the orchards where folks never ever get to go to because people were so willing to open up their doors to this cider tour. Ended up at the Musée de Poiret, which I visited about 2 years ago, had a special tour there, and they were ecstatic because Americans had never visited there, not at that degree. Everywhere, there was just absolute happiness to be able to meet with the secret cider maker and kind of get lost with the bus. So we had that French experience of getting lost in the country roads, which happens. Walking out and seeing my good friend Michel Darget, who was on the podcast, which was called Cider Behind the Scenes in Normandy, and having him help us find Roland and his father Regis and mother Sylvie to be able to drink in their little tasting room that never had American visitors before. It just blew our socks off. We could have spent hours at every site because people were just so willing to share, including Eric Bordelais. That was an outstanding visit with him. He has a new cider coming out. It's already out. It's out. He only made 1,000 bottles. I have one here, and I'll be talking about that. So I'm trying to figure out how I do all this. I think next week I'm going to just roll out some little clippings. I'll probably put out some special things here and there. Suffice to say, I'll just leave it at this. There's going to be another cider tour to Normandy. I'm already planning it with my French counterpart. And it's going to be, again, in September of 2019 in that same area. Don't miss on this. This is just, will blow your mind. We were able to be out in the pear orchards eating these pears, having that juice, just like I imagined, dripping down, tasting a zillion different varieties of pears. I think that's really blew folks out of the water to experience Domfront, this region that's so unknown. And then to taste cider and poiret, it's just a game changer for people. So to the folks who came along on the tour with me who are listening now, I'm tapping my chest to you, closing my eyes, blowing you kisses on both sides of the cheek, and just want to thank you for making that tour so successful. It meant a lot to me, and it meant a lot to the makers and to the pear and apple trees, which are dependent on our knowledge, awareness, and education so that they are protected, because that's a big thing going on, not only in Normandy, but around the world. Folks are finally kind of waking up and realizing that this is a national treasure at each location, if not a world treasure, these palms. And on that same note of tours, I'm going to just switch gears and remind you to sign up now for the November 1st Cider Tour heading to Vermont and New Hampshire. It takes place the day before Cider Days kicks off. So it's on a Thursday. We leave from Greenfield, Massachusetts at about 8 in the morning and return at 10 at night. It's going to be a visit to Farnham Hill with Steve Wood and the team there. Then we'll go up to Eden Cider to see Eleanor Leger. That is a renowned site for ice cider. Cruise down through Stowe for a little tasting and then have a cider dinner at Fable Farm Fermentory in their barn with a hearth, and also get to meet the maker at Tin Hat, that's Teddy Weber, and one of the oldest cideries in the country, Flag Hill Farm, Sebastian Lusader. Do I need to convince you to do this? I really hope not. And if you can't make it, please let other people know that this tour is taking place. If they are headed to Cider Days, do it. Don't miss out on these tours. They just will blow your mind. If the Normandy tour was any indication of what we could do when we come together as a collective group and have fun out there in Ciderville, do it. Go to ciderchat.com to the Totally Cider page. You'll get all the links for the reservations and sign up now. November 1st, New England Cider Tour. My little bag of crisp apple chips that Margaret of King's Mill Cider gave to me, along with some really nice other snackaroos like coconuts and some nuts, which really endeared me even further to these folks that we're going to be chatting with coming up next. Ryan Monkman introduced me to these folks while I was on tour in Ontario this past June. Ryan is based in Wellington, Prince Edward County in Ontario. That's right on the shores of Lake Ontario. And you've heard a number of episodes that I've been putting out from that tour. I absolutely fell in love with my Canadian neighbors to the north. It wasn't hard to do that. I already enjoyed the Canadian sights and sceneries, and to be able to dive into their cider was an absolute treat. So again, what I'm eating here while I'm listening is crisp apple chips, which they always have at the tasting room at King's Mill Cider for the kids. And I guess Margaret saw that I was a kid at heart, and she figured I could use a little bit of Snicky Snack. So I've been holding on to these until this time, and essentially it's dried apple rings. I'm putting my hand at the bag. You could hear that crumbling in the background. And a nice fruit-flavored chip. I just love how cider makers aren't just all about the adults and drinking, but really a full family experience, which is what you will find there. We were sitting down having a conversation at this cidery that at that point was just 1 month old, even though it was a number of years in the making. And I could tell that Ryan was really excited to have me meet these folks. You're going to hear all about their background and a bit about their cider too. So without further delay, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Keys Cornelius Morsink and Margaret Van Helvoort of King's Mill Cider, based in Stirling, Ontario. We're sitting at your dining room table. We're looking out into your backyard on this like sloping hill. It's really green out. I see some solar panels. I see a greenhouse. Seeing over there, that looks like a little nursery orchard. Is that?
Yeah, we have a orchard that's about 2 to 3 years old, the trees, and we have about 700 trees now. So we also did grafts last year. It didn't turn out too well, but we did all right, and we did a lot of Kingston Blacks and and Yarlington Mills and Brown Snout and different apples more from Michelin and Fricant Rouge, so from France and from and from Britain. So we're trying to get a more tannic apple, which are very hard to find on the market here locally. So, but we do find heritage apples. So we also have russets planted. We have Tolman Sweets. We have wine saps, and which was my mother's favorite apple. So and russet. So that's where I got into that. And we have a Northern Spy and a few Macintosh, Ambrosia, a few different trees like that that we planted. So next year we're looking to get into different different trees again, more tannic apples, because we can get the other apples on the market locally here.
So this is a new orchard. How are they doing in this climate and soil and culture and, you know, the any kind of disease that you're seeing? How's that going?
We had a lot of problems with apple rust. So we had two very bad years. The first year we planted, so that was in 2016.
And can we just say what apple rust is for folks who are just cider drinkers? They have no idea.
Yeah, it's a fungal that comes from a the juniper tree. So what do they call the red cedar, which is really a juniper. And it's a secondary host, so it produces a, it looks like a gelatinous little, an ugly little spore maker that... that actually infects the trees, the apple trees. It affects the leaves, so leaves brown out and fall off, and so you don't get much growth. So that's the biggest problem we had.
How do you deal with it?
We have to spray with a fungicidal type spray, which we're doing just because we have no choice. But we don't like to spray much, but we're thinking about doing sprays there. But as soon as the apples start growing, we're not spraying the apples. So we're staying away from that. So we're doing an integrated pest management and fungal management, so just the minimal sprays we can use. So we tried it with no sprays for 2 years, and it was a disaster. So the first year, 2016, we had a drought. So we had about 400, 500 trees. At that time, we were watering them by hand. So we
Had no irrigation.
We had no irrigation set up.
So you don't get enough rain up here?
We had a drought 1 year. It was very funny. So 16, we had a drought. And then 17 last year, we had tons of rain. So much rain. And that's when the rust really came out. So I had a lot of problems with that. And we haven't had that many pest problems. We're trying to keep that under control by even picking off pests by hand. So we do that. We go around all the trees and try to clean them up as much as we can. And but it's been a... challenging when it was drought, because we have kids too, and they didn't want to really, they got sick of watering with us.
That's so, lot of trees to,
a lot of trees to water. So we're just pulling with a small tractor. This year we have a larger tractor, so so we have different ways of doing things. So
scaling
We're scaling up, and we're improving slowly, but it's you know, it takes time. We've been open a whole month so far, you know, so we opened April 21st.
I heard that. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's super exciting, right? But so but it takes, so I think for folks listening, it's kind of important to know that if you want to make cider, it doesn't just happen like boom overnight. Like a brewery, you get the equipment, you put your order in for the hops and the malt, you know, and the, or the grain or whatever, and then you're good to go. Not that it's that easy either, but when you are dealing with the orchard-based cidery or apples in general, there is a long... how long has it taken for you to start from the conception of the idea?
The conception of starting a business has probably been about 4 years. So we've probably been brewing for about six, or fermenting for about six in the basement. But it's been longer than that. I've actually been, my first spontaneous ferment was 40 years ago when I was going to Mennonite school. We all received a gallon jug of apples, apple juice, that was pressed for the school. And I put it in my locker and it fermented. So that was the first time I fermented any apples. So it's been 40 years in the making. So for sure it's only been a month in the opening, but 40 years in the making.
What's your soil like?
Here it's pretty, it's clay. We have limestone too, a lot of limestone underneath. So we're actually looking at grapes at one time, but it's a bit too far away from the lake. So it's a bit too cold. So that's why we're getting more into the apples and we want to give the cider. I've been into fermentation a long time. We lived in Africa for 10 years, so Margaret and I, and we were working for the UN, so we did eight, we were working on eight projects. And at that point, we were doing, we were making our own yogurt, we were sauerkraut, and we were brewing ourselves, and brewing different things. So, and then the Comoro Islands, I also did a lot of fermentation of mangoes and raspberries and... we did some distilling there, since they distill Lang Lang oil, so they had stills, so we were doing some distilling. So we did mango eau de vie, which is delicious.
Oh my goodness, so, wow, I can only imagine.
Yeah,
so mango,
They're a lot of fun. I love mangoes.
Me
one of my
too.
Favorite fruits.
Oh, I wish they could grow where we
Alphonse.
Live.
Mm. Oh. And the Comoros had at least 40 different types of mangoes. So it was incredible.
Wow. Who knew?
Yeah,
like apples.
Like apples. There's just tons of different kinds of mangoes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I imagine they have heritage mangoes too, like they have.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. Yeah.
So. Right. Wow. So yeah. That's fascinating. Are you still working for the UN?
Not anymore. So we're just, we have our own jewelry business. So we're actually doing that. And that's what kind of pays for the cider business at the moment as it takes on. And we're looking at the cider business as more a retirement business. So okay. I do a lot of traveling. So I'm traveling to India, Nepal, and Thailand.
For the jewelry.
For the jewelry business. So,
you're not making the jewelry, but you are importing jewelry.
What we do is I'm also a prospector miner, so we actually do stones here. And stone cutting is no longer happening in North America. Mm-hmm. People don't cut stones into cabochons and things like that. Yeah. So we have it done overseas. So we cut plates here, and then we draw it out, and then we have the stones cut and ground for us there, and then set into jewelry, and then we bring it back.
Cool. So if folks want to see your jewelry, is there like an online way that they could?
Yeah, I think nirvanagift.com.
Nirvanagift.com.
Yeah,
okay.
So they have stuff there. But we're wholesalers mostly, so that's a retail site, but we sell the stores. That's what we do.
I see.
So, and that's why we can still do the cider. We have time because we can make our own hours.
Got
so
it.
It's very nice.
Cool.
Because there's some days when you're out there for 14, 16 hours, you know, just either bottling or filtering or those long-term type of endeavors that take place in cider making.
So. Right. Case just handed me this nice list of all the different things that you're making currently. And the top one is a premium. Is this, are we looking at like a, you know, we often use the term flagship or like one that style that you're always going to try to have available?
Yeah, what we're doing is our premium dry and hopped, those will be more commercial brands.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those will be sold in kegs and bottles. We do it all in 750 ml bottles. And so it looks more like a wine bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing still cider at the moment. We will be doing carbonated. We're getting in the equipment for carbonated now.
Bright tank?
Yeah, so we're getting a bright tank hopefully soon. And we have another little machine we can carbonate with. So that mm-hmm. someone made for us in Walkerton, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll be carbonating kegs there. And then, so those are more our commercial type ciders.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, and we're also ginger has been very popular. So we're probably going to do a ginger later too. And then we have our driest one, which is a scrumpy. So I had some English friends that asked me to make a scrumpy. So we did it without the apple floating in it and that kind of stuff. So a little bit cleaner. So it's actually filtered, but it's still scrumpy-ish. So we were very lucky to get some experimental apples from the Ontario government. And those we used to make the scrumpy. So it's a bit more tannic and extremely bone dry. And we also did a scrumpy malolactic fermentation. So we did two different ones just to experiment and see how it went. And they both turned out very well.
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I just want to take a pause there from the Ontario government. What was that? Or what is that setup? Are they doing out of a university or what?
Well, what they've done, they've given different trees to orchards all around Ontario. So they have the trees, and then they find out the reactions of how the apple's growing, how it's doing. So Ryan and I were pressing with someone we know here in the county, and they had the apples there. So we got the apples from them.
Oh,
so it turned out very well.
So
hopefully that will, in the future, we'll have a lot more of these type of apples coming in. But right now it's very difficult to get just the basic apples here in Ontario. So it's happening. It's the same problem they have in the
US,
States.
Yeah, everywhere.
But New York is a bit further ahead than us, of course. But so.
Wow, that's exciting. That's I always love to hear how the government is supporting a really farm-based product. It just makes absolute sense.
Well, here in Ontario, they've been very, very good. There's going to be a kickback, too, where we get 70 cents a liter for every liter we sell. So they're really promoting cider in Ontario. And it's helped the farmers. The farmers had all these apples they couldn't sell anymore. Most of the people pulled out all their apples in the 1980s as the Chinese concentrate came in and kind of killed the market.
Yeah.
So it's just we're trying to work with the farmers and what they have and then make cider out of that.
Mm.
So I know when we took I met Ryan at the course at Cornell, and there they said, what is a good cider? Or what is a good cider apple? It's the one you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really play with it and take everything you can out of that apple. And that's what we've been trying to work with.
Right on. Now, just again, the course at Cornell was with the Peter Mitchell course. Was that true?
Or
was
I
that
took the second Peter Mitchell course. The one we took was with was Chris. What was the last name?
Geller.
Chris Geller.
Oh, okay.
So we took the course with him, and then I took the Peter Mitchell course last year, the science and production course.
Okay. And how many Canadians were in that course?
I think four or five.
Four or five
Canadians.
Yeah,
we're pretty well represented in everything. I saw it at LinCAP, too. Like, there was a lot of Ontario judges there.
There was. So, yeah. That was very happy for me because I was like, oh, look at that. Canada in the house.
Yeah. I'm not going to speak much on this, but I'm going to interject with this.
That's Ryan Monkman talking.
CiderCon 2019, we're doing the Canadian Consulate Party. So we're going to get a hotel room. It's going to be Nanaimo bars, Tragically Hip on the radio. Maybe we can haul in some beaver tails.
Oh, my goodness.
Butter tarts.
Oh, my goodness.
That was on a Chesterfield.
That's what Kat said yesterday is we'll pull out the couch and replace it with the Chesterfield.
Now, I don't know what all these references are, but I'm very curious to find out.
This is a little Easter egg for your Canadian listeners.
Yeah. Good. And we adore all the Canadian listeners.
But I'm most excited. I think beaver tails would pair very well with cider.
That's it.
Oh, actually eating beaver tails.
Yep. Yeah, it's a kind of donut.
Oh.
You have to know.
Okay.
I won't tell about a Chesterfield.
Are you serious? Like, people actually eat a beaver tail? Or is this a joke?
Do you know what an elephant ear is?
I know what an elephant's ear is,
like the pastry? It's fried dough coated in sugar.
Okay, yeah.
We call them beaver tails.
Yeah. Okay.
They're delicious.
All right. Yeah. Oh,
carny food.
You know, there's one thing that I adore about Canada and Canadians is the sense of humor, the quality of food, the congeniality. It's really a treasure of a country, and I feel very happy that you're such a close neighbor, and I really feel thrilled to be here and have this opportunity. It's really amazing. So, we'll look forward to that inside of
the Canadian Consulate.
The Canadian Consulate. Okay, happening. So, we're talking about Scrumpy.
Yeah. And then we did another one, Arrested. So, the Scrumpy is more an English-style cider. And then we went to a French-style cider, and that was we called Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. Because there we stopped the fermentation at a certain point, and we left a little bit of sweetness in it. So, and it's actually quite nice.
And I see that you have it described as calm sweetness balanced with firm acidity. You have a nice play with words. Yeah, that's very inviting.
I can thank Margaret and Karina for doing that. They worked on most of the tasting notes and things like that.
Great, so. That's lovely. And then it goes on with floral, naturally off dry cider, great thirst quencher. And that's the Arrested Development. That's 10% alcohol by volume. And that's what I see here is your highest ABV on the list here. Well named too, Arrested Development. Yeah. So you know, watch out for those 10%ers. They are often very sneaky.
They are.
People don't realize that it tastes so. You know,
because it's so well integrated, the alcohol through the taste. So it's cool.
And you have ice cider.
We have ice cider. So we started our we went pretty well with our first vintage. So we did an ice cider. We did it in barrels outside. So what we did, we brought in about 1,000 liters. It was just an experiment. And we didn't press apples the way it was. We did it from juice. So we did it from juice. And then Margaret and I were out there at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, scooping slush off the top till it froze. We brought it down to about 250 liters. And then we started fermenting. So we started the fermentation and nothing was happening at first. So it was just because it was so thick and going on. I took off to India and I got this call when I was in India. It's going everywhere. And so Ryan came in to help Margaret. And I guess it was just flying everywhere. It fermented. We were lucky. We had it in smaller containers, 100-liter bins, stainless steel bins. Mm-hmm. So Margaret, with the girls, pulled it out on the porch. And this was during the winter, so it was about negative 20. And then she packed it with ice. And then it slowed down after 2 or 3 days. It was still fermenting for 2 or 3 days out in that cold. So, and then I came back and it had stopped at exactly the place I wanted to stop. So it was just a miracle.
So it was fermenting. You had the juice come in and you had the juice It froze naturally outside. When you said in barrels, what do you mean?
Well, we did it in 200 liter barrels.
Okay.
So we had 6 barrels out there, so with that we could control it. So we could, because normally getting it in totes, not most of the people do it in large totes and then bring the tote and pull it in.
Yeah.
But we wanted to get right in. So we were gassing it every day. So we were CO2ing it. Just we had small holes in the size of the barrel. Okay. So we kept a nice gas
plastic
flow.
Barrels.
Plastic barrels. Yeah. And then it was out there for about 3 weeks. And we brought it down to about 31 bricks, and then
did you pitch yeast to this or?
Yes,
you did.
Yeah.
So you pitched it before it froze.
So we pitched two different yeasts.
Okay, because that's a little bit different, isn't it? There's a lot of different ways to make iced cider.
Yeah.
Like folks will just take the juice and freeze the juice,
mm-hmm.
and then ferment that juice.
Yeah.
But you had pitched the yeast beforehand. That's
interesting. We didn't know. We actually,
I'm sorry.
That was a mistake.
Okay.
So we actually pitched the juice after it was condensed.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And then we did a cold soak.
Yeah.
One yeast cold soak. And then we did another yeast. And then we happened to have a garage yeast that we call it. So there's a spontaneous yeast happening in our garage, which is happening right now. So there's, we have some, three different ciders going right now. And, there's something in there that's doing, so we're putting in two yeasts and we're getting a third yeast. So it's building complexity into the ciders, which has been a lot of fun. So
it's
a nice yeast. It's a good yeast.
Oh,
it's,
good.
It's a friendly yeast.
Oh, good. Yeah. I haven't met an unfriendly yeast, but I know they're out there, I suppose.
They're out there.
Yeah, they try to stay away from all my wild yeasts. Anyways, so cold soak. What do you mean by cold soak?
Well, we used a Gaia, which is just a yeast that will start fermenting at about 2 degrees, but it doesn't 2 degrees Celsius. So sorry, I know you guys speaking Fahrenheit. So
yes,
about
we do. Yeah.
About 37, something like that.
36.
Mm-hmm. So Fahrenheit. Okay.
Yeah, Fahrenheit. So then, and that way, it doesn't really produce much alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it protects the. Protects the cider against any kind of vinegary type yeast that are coming in.
Mm.
It dominates that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more stable and it gives a lot of mouthfeel, and we've had very good luck with that. So we played with that. And then we put in our other yeast after a few days, and then another yeast came and took over that. So
yeah, you're building up the yeast tolerance for the alcohol level. That's what you're working with. And how do you stop fermentation on the iced cider? Because that's a difficult, folks listening out there in Ciderville are like, oh, I try it, and then all of a sudden it's like bottle popping,
sparkling. We brought
it
outside. It was cold enough just to stop it outside, and then we bentoed it, and we had to put a bit of sulfur in there to make sure it stayed.
Yeah.
And then we bottled it fairly quickly, and we went through a whole filtration system. We went first through 580 pads, 350 pads, 170 pads, and then we sterile filtered it after that. So, and that's how we really removed all the yeast and everything else.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Because it started re-fermenting a bit again, just even the day from when we brought it inside to just when we had to transfer it over to get bottled. It was, so you have to watch out. It's very fast because the sugar content is so high, it will start re-fermenting, especially with our garage yeast here. We have to watch out with him, or her, whatever it is. So.
Do you do any oaking with the ice cider? Or?
No, we haven't yet, but we don't have that much room. That's the problem. We're dealing, you'll see that we're dealing out of our house. We're dealing out of an 800 square foot garage at the moment, and we have about 12,000 liters capacity in there, and we're getting more equipment. We want to get some chillers and things like that, so we're working on that at the moment. So then we could, with a chiller, stop the fermentation that way too.
Sure.
But that's all more equipment we have to buy and things like that. So it's
1 month. You've only started 1 month. I mean, I'm impressed at the list of ciders that you have. Is pretty dandy here.
Yeah,
I mean, especially ice cider. Yeah, that's the first one I've seen in the tour about that we've been doing.
I should try it. It's really good.
Really
good.
Yeah, that is super neat. And it's 8.5%.
Yes.
Which is, a little bit on the lower side of a nice cider.
Yeah. So, no, we wanted to go a little bit lower and then not as thick and
the viscosity is not heavy-duty legs.
Yeah, a lot of people complain about the ice wine. They're saying it's just too thick, too sweet, and stuff. So we actually threw quite a bit of acidity in there. We put a lot of Mac and Northern Spy to bring out the acidity.
Nice.
So that kind of balanced it really well.
Oh,
so
exciting.
So it's a little, let's say, it's not as sweet, and the acidity balances very, very well.
Mm.
So it's turned out very nice.
Cool. Well, what a awesome list here. So I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 ciders. One ice cider. What's that? And
in a month.
In a month. I know. I know it took more than a month, but I mean, that's pretty righteous. Let's just talk, too, about the name of your cider, because I always kind of curious about that. King's Mill Cider. Your logo is an apple with one little green leaf, and then there's the crown that I'm kind of seeing on the highways, mm-hmm. right? Want to say more about that?
King's Mill Cider, we're living on King's Mill Road at this moment, mm-hmm. so that's what our address is. It's 596 King's Mill Road, mm-hmm. Stirling, Ontario. And we have a cider mill, or not a cider mill, we have a mill right around the corner here, within 1 kilometer. And that's on the back of our other labels. You'll see, I'll show you later, and it's got the painting of the mill. So the logo, the apple, what we wanted to do originally, we wanted to get a real apple and have it cut with a crown. But I couldn't find anybody to do it that exact, so it was very hard. So we had a friend of ours, Karina, who did a lot of our work, and she painted this for us. So we had the original in the room, I'll show you, and the original painting of the mill. Yeah. So, and she's been doing all our graphic work for us. She's a great, she's actually a landscaper. She has a landscape company. So unfortunately for the summer, we don't have her. She's busy doing other things, but she'll be back in the winter, fall winter. So
nice,
working with
nice.
Us again. And it's been a great, we've met so many local people and so many local people have been involved. Mm-hmm. So it's been very nice. Mm-hmm. So here we have,
awesome. Yeah.
We've been very lucky. Margaret and my girls have been working for the Cooney Apple Farm, which is right down the road here for the last 10, more than that, almost 15 years. So we've had a connection to an apple farm here for 15 years, and they've helped us with pressing. If we have any juice that has to be stored, they have freezers and cold rooms. They've been helping us with that. So we have to thank them from the bottom of our hearts, because it's really, without them, we wouldn't be here. So it's just, and they've been very, very kind to us. And generally, the whole area has been very, very good and very supportive. Mm. Like I said, our grand opening, we had between 500 and 700 people come. So, and that's just a local small town.
A month ago.
Wow. And here we're living in Stirling, a population of 1,500 people. And we're 6 kilometers north of that. So like, we're talking like we're in the middle of nowhere. In our whole area here, Hastings County, I think there's, what is it? No, Stirling Road, there's 5,000 people. And that goes from, it must be across, almost 70 miles by 70 miles. Like, it's a large area. So it's mostly farms. Yeah. And that's another thing we want to work with. There's a lot of old abandoned orchards in the area. So we've been doing a lot of picking and finding of apples here. And so we want to work with that, of course.
You know? Yeah.
So I found some good spitters, very bitter apples and things like that. So
bonus.
So that'll be coming out next year. So we'll be working. Go into others. Yeah. We love to blend. We love to play.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. And that's what cider, we enjoy so much about cider, that it gives you the room to play. Like, there's so many different things you can do with cider.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very exciting for us. And we like to experiment, so that's been very nice.
No doubt. Well, should we go down and look at your tasting room?
We'd love you to come.
Chit-chat about that?
Sure.
We are walking on the other side of the house here.
Entrance here.
Entrance directly off the driveway, coming out to a live-edged bar table in the tasting room. What kind of tree is that?
This is pine.
Mm.
And I was going to buy a stainless steel sink for the cider house.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy had this leaning against his against his barn. So
it's like a 3-inch slab there?
Yep, I think it's 2.5.
Two and a half. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Yeah, pretty close. I had to mill it down.
We just cleaned it off and milled it down, and we took off the bark because there was little bugs underneath the bark, unfortunately. So we had to clean that up. And that could be the one of bugs eating it.
That's lovely.
So it's only been here for, that's 8 months, I think. So we're letting it crack. So there's a crack here. We want to let it crack, then we're going to sand it again, work on it,
and really cool. Yeah, so you have this, and then behind on the wall are the bottles presentation, some bicycles up there. Those don't look like Dutch bicycles to me, though. Like, the way the seat is kind of leaned back, and then that kind of uprightness.
They were made in Indonesia, so they're probably originally with a Dutch influence, but made in Indonesia, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And those ones are from India.
All these, like, little, bicycles piece. Yeah. I love it. So we're here in the tasting room, and then we could come right over here, and this is just so neat. You could look right into the cidery. Looks like variable tanks there, right?
Yep, we have variable tanks. We have from, and we have a few milk tanks. They're the long tanks, and they've been great for fermentation. And then we're getting a couple other tanks coming in, a Bright's tank and another tank later, so we're working on that now.
Nice setup. Yeah. Wow.
So we'll go inside and take a look.
You could do a lot in there.
We can do almost 12,500 liters. So it's
awesome.
So right now there's about, the 2,000, 3,000, there's about 6,000 liters going on there at the moment. Here we're part of the Craft Association of Ontario. And what happens here, we're only allowed to use Ontario products. Our local neighbors here, Small Spade Farms, which is about 2 kilometers from here, they grew the ginger for us.
Nice.
So they grew
local
greenhouses.
Ginger. Wow.
Local ginger in
wow.
greenhouses.
Yeah.
And then the hops are also local that we use. So we're using all local products. I'm working on a mojito right now, so I'm making some bitters myself, so out of roots and that. So
fun.
I'm playing around with that, and it's actually worked out pretty good. So
good, yeah.
I'm quite surprised. And we're growing the mint, so we have a large garden here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have rhubarb there, so we'll be doing a rhubarb cider. I've done a few rhubarb ciders, and I wasn't thrilled with them.
Oh, interesting,
but,
yeah.
But I'm going to play with little different amounts and different things going on. And we're growing some lemon balm, so we can get that lemon flavor, because we can't use lemons in Ontario either. So it's
using lemon balm to kind of get that lemony.
Yeah, so that's what I'll use for that. So.
Well, that's an interesting way for a country to kind of deal with that, or, you know, I don't know if this is true across the board of Canada. Is that true?
I just know Ontario.
Okay.
So I think
it's just a part.
And it's just, it's a volunteer thing. Like we could, you could actually throw it in, and then you just pay a higher rate with excise, Canada excise for duty. But we'd rather keep it local.
Yeah.
I like the idea of local. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, because if we expand too, the idea of this is to start a cidery and then later on improve it and have some growth and then hire local people. Like we're living in a very depressed area here.
Mm.
So it'd be really nice to hire some local people.
Yeah, get some
work.
So,
so the mayor's been talking to us, the warden and different people like that. So they've all been talking, they've all been super interested.
The warden, is there a prison?
No, the warden is a person that watches all the different townships.
Oh,
so it's just so you have
different kind of warden. I like those kind
of
wardens.
Yeah, so you have mayor, and then you have of the area like that, and then you have a warden who watches over the whole area.
I see.
And he's also our neighbor over here. So, and the warden, mayor, he's both our mayor and warden.
I love it.
And he also owns the Cooney Apple Store. So, so they have the apple farm, and that's how we got connected with him through the apples.
Yeah.
And the first thing he did, he came over and he bought 2 cases of cider to give to all the different people in. It's Sterling, so it worked out really nice.
Yeah.
So
cool. Well, can we try a little bit of cider here? So this is your tasting glasses here.
So what would you like to try?
Yeah. Well,
as you might suspect, Ciderville, I ended up trying all the ciders there at King's Mill Cider that day. Because, shoot, I was coming all the way from my spot of Ciderville all the way up to Canada. You bet I wasn't going to go home without a try of each of those. I had the main flagship, which is a premium and premium dry, and the hop ginger. There's also the hop cider and then a straight up ginger. Remember, that ginger is locally sourced, as is the hops, and he uses a Cascade and Pearl mix of hops. Those main ciders are all 9% alcohol by volume. There's also the Russet Heritage and a Scrumpy, an Arrested Development, which comes in at 10%. Woo! No wonder it's called Arrested Development. But yet, you wouldn't know that it's so high ABV. So, you're forewarned. Watch out. Make sure you bring a bottle of that home. There's Ice Cider. It was so tart and really fruit-forward. I have a bottle of that sitting for me right now that I'm going to be cracking open as soon as I get this finally edited for you. And that comes in at 8.5%, which is a nice balance for an ice cider. In fact, go to the show notes for this here episode 148 and you'll get to see the process that they were doing to make that ice cider. Then there's also the MLF Scrumpy, and I'm not sure if they have any more of that left because it's a limited edition, but that's malolactic fermentation of that Scrumpy, so it's a very nice mouthfeel for that cider and super low acid because of the malolactic fermentation. And to make it even better, if you can't get there, they actually have an online store, so you could have it delivered to your front door. You'll see the link in the show notes for this here episode 148. I'd like to thank Ryan Monkman for bringing me to King's Mill Cider and introducing me to these wonderful people. Again, Margaret sent me on the road with these like lovely little apple chips that they give to the kids and some other little snick snacks. And Case was just such an informative man with quite the little radio voice, right? They're doing some fine things there. We were able to then walk into their cidery and take a look around. And in a small area, you could just see the wonders of Ciderville when you get some really intelligent people just doing it yourself, doing like, I think he said, 12,000 lead or something like that that he's doing in that cidery. That's something, huh? Really kicking it out. Thanks again to Case and Margaret and to Ryan Monkman for bringing me up on that cider tour to Ontario and that region. Make sure you look those folks up next time you're up in Prince Edward County, Ontario. Well, that was fun, and I'm so glad I was able to bring that chat to you. I have one more chat from that trip that will be coming up shortly on a new episode of Cider Chat, so stay tuned. There is more coming from Ontario. Actually, there is so much more coming from Ontario. I am planning on doing a tour there. This is the way it rolls, Ciderville. You got to keep on going out to Ciderville to taste the cider with the maker, smell the terroir, and get into the groove. Again, upcoming cider tour, November 1st, New England. Heading to New Hampshire and Vermont. Don't miss it. Sign up. Time is running out. We're less than a month away. Tick tock, tick tock. You know you're going to Cider Days. You do not want to miss out on that. That all weekend festival with the Cider Salon. There's some tickets for sale, but tickets are running out for some of those events, so get on it. Don't delay. And for me, I wouldn't be here this week or every week if it wasn't for the support of patrons of Cider Chat. You could become a patron too by going to the Cider Chat Patreon page. You could Google it or find a link at ciderchat.com. There are some critical cider makers I want to thank for that, and that would be Ironbark Cider Works on California on Claremont, Current Cider, which is based in Perkasie, Pennsylvania, and has a cider bar in Fishtown, Philadelphia. Then going out to Ross Cider Company in the UK in Herefordshire. Big tip of the glass to those folks. They're always like doing such good positive cheer in the UK out there. I really love that area, and I'm getting it together for a cider tour there. Scrambling, folks. I am scrambling. And then there's also a Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. That is just a stone's throw from Germany. Definitely something you should visit if you are in that area. And I also want to give a shout out to John Edwards, who is an outstanding gentleman. He is a man behind Process and Analytical NMR Services. Did that workshop on the chemical fingerprints for cider, helping you analyze cider. So check that out. There's a link in the show notes. Now, those are the main supporters currently of Cider Chat, of Patreon. I could use some more for sure. So if you are a commercial maker and you believe that this is worth your time, please sign up today and help keep a cider going up around the world. I'm at a transitional page right now in my life where I'm, you know, kind of like a startup cidery. And my service to you is a full cup of knowledge on cider events and news and hopefully inspiration too. So sign up to become a patron. It would mean a lot. Even if you aren't a commercial maker, if you just sign up for $3 a month, that would, if everybody who listened right now, the number of downloads that are coming in are just like crazy. If every one of those folks sign up for $3, I would be able to sleep at night. So at least I think it's worth your time because you've been spending so much time with me. But alas, it is time to roll out of here and start filling my glass with some of that nice ice cider from King's Mill Cider. Mm-mm. Can't wait. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
I'm kind of curious about this. I don't know if you know anything about this, Ryan, but you know, the oxidation of cider once it's open. Because I always have all these projects in my refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back, and it still tastes good. In fact, it's even getting better.
That's it.
So what's going on there? What's the difference?
Yeah, so it depends on the apples you're using. So if you're using apples with more tannin, those tannins are going to protect it in the bottle.
Of course, yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing that's helping you on the oxidation
problem. Yeah. But you have a high-tannin wine, and you're still...
High-tannin wines can last a couple days, but then that tannin starts to bind, and they kind of lose that character. Mm. But the apple, when you start to oxidize some of the tannin, you can kind of release some of the fruit aroma, too. So it's like kind of a two-phase thing.
I've been wondering about that. It's not something that we've really talked about, but there's something going on there, because a lot of people... Well, do I have to drink that whole bottle?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they buy a whole 750 ml. You don't have to.
That's it.
It could last for a while, especially with the screw cap, which is great. It's another bonus.
It is.
A huge bonus.
Yeah.
I mean, really huge. Because wine does have that thing, like my brother always would say, if you open that bottle of wine, you got to drink it.
That's
which
it.
Put me under a lot of pressure. You know those big brothers. That
That's
me
it.
Like that. What can I say? He gave me lots of good advice, so.
Put it down. There we go.
Yeehaw!